stupid for sure, after one conversation and one email exchange. But still, whether it was real or an illusion, it makes a rip when it goes. Steve starts to argue with Stephanie about who was the most wasted guest at the party, and my questions about Nathan seem to have been quickly forgotten. We finish our ice cream, and then don't know what to do. We've only been hanging out for about 15 minutes, but the reason we're here no longer exists. Stephanie proposes a trip to the secondhand store down the street, and even though Ben and Steve protest, nobody can think of anything better to do. I am disappearing again, this time into silence. As Stephanie and Rebecca try things on, and Steve looks through old records, Ben and I hover on the sidelines. He keeps checking his phone, but then, as Stephanie and Rebecca argue over who looks better in a 50s sundress, he says to me,
I know it probably doesn't matter, but I'd bet good money that the guy who said he was Steve's cousin had a reason for doing it. Guys act weird, sure, but it's usually for a reason. And it's rarely to be mean. It's much more likely that he liked you.
Then he goes back to his phone and writes another text. I go on to my own phone, wanting there to be an email from Nathan explaining everything. But there isn't. So I write to him instead. Nathan. Apparently, Steve doesn't have a cousin, Nathan, and none of his cousins were at his party. Care to explain? Rhiannon. Almost immediately, I get a reply.
Rhiannon, I can indeed explain. Can we meet up? It's the kind of explanation that needs to be done in person. Love, Nathan.
That love hits me. I know it could be a taunt or a tease, and I also know it isn't a taunt or a tease. Rebecca is calling me over to decide who gets the dress. Ben is pulling himself farther into the background, not wanting to get involved. Steve is holding up a Led Zeppelin record and asking Stephanie if he already has it. I don't reply to the email. Not yet. I need to think. Rebecca gets the dress. Steve gets the record. Stephanie finds another dress that she says she likes more than the one Rebecca has. Ben spots a dictionary and starts talking about whether or not dictionaries, physical dictionaries, will exist in 20 years. When everyone's done shopping, they make some noises about hanging out more and eventually getting dinner. I tell them I have to go home. Chapter 7. I don't owe Nathan anything. He lied to me. Because of this, I should let it go. But even if I don't owe him anything, I feel I owe myself the explanation. I want to know. I stay awake half the night trying to figure it out. Then I get up and write him back. Nathan, this better be a good explanation. I'll meet you in the coffee shop at the Clover Bookstore at 5. Rhiannon. The bookstore seems like a good, safe place to meet. It's in public, but it's also a place Justin would never, ever go. I already know I'm not going to tell him about this. If I spent most of the night awake with my thoughts, Justin seems to have gotten plenty of sleep. It's almost a good morning with him. When I see him, he doesn't look like he wants to run away. He asks me how hanging out with Rebecca and the others went. I'm impressed because I didn't expect him to remember what I was doing. He even listens to my response for about a minute. Then he grows bored. But I don't blame him, because it's pretty boring. It's not what's really playing in my mind. It's not what I'm really thinking about. Waiting. I can't stand the feeling of waiting, knowing I'm stranded for a few hours in the boring parts. I check my email at lunch and find something new from Nathan. Rhiannon, I'll be there, although not in a way you might expect. Bear with me and hear me out. A. My immediate reaction is that he's not gay at all, and that his name must start with an A. He was hitting on me, and when I caught him hitting on me, he made up that he was gay. It explains the connection I felt a little more. Both magnets were working. I know I should be offended, but part of me doesn't mind if he was hitting on me, especially because he was too sweet to do it all the way. It's still a lie, and I'm still angry about that, but at least it's a flattering lie. I know Rebecca would love it if I talked to her about this. I know she is perpetually ready for that kind of conversation. She thinks friendships are built out of that kind of conversation. I sit across from her at lunch, and I can see the question marks darting out of her eyes. Does she know something is going on, or is she just hoping? Justin is right next to me, so it's not like I can say anything. But even if it was just me and Rebecca, safely alone in her car, I'm not sure I would tell her. I like that it's mine, and mine alone. I get to the bookstore early and take a table by the window in the cafe. I'm nervous, like this is a first date. I know I shouldn't be feeling this way. I'm only here for answers, not to get a boyfriend. I already have a boyfriend. It's amazing how many people will walk into a cafe area when you're waiting for someone else. At least I already know what he looks like. I wonder if he'll still be wearing a tie. Maybe that's his thing. Maybe he's really that much of a dork. I could be friends with that kind of behavior. I tried to distract myself with an Us Weekly, but my mind doesn't even want to look at the pictures. A girl comes in, and I don't really notice her until she's right in front of me, at my table, sitting down. Rude. I'm sorry, I say. That seat's taken. I'm expecting her to tell me she's sorry and move on, but instead she says, "It's okay. Nathan sent me." Weird. I take a good look at the girl, her Anthropology top, her Banana Republic pants, and figure she's not evil. But her presence is still confusing. "He sent you?" I say. "Where is he?" Was he so scared that I'd be pissed that he brought reinforcements? Total dork move. I look to see if he's watching us, if he's waiting to see if it's safe to show his face. But he's nowhere in sight. "Rhiannon," the girl says. I turn back to her, and she's looking right at me. Unsettling. There's something big she's not telling me. She's both excited and terrified to tell me. It's all there in her eyes. I don't look away. I am not ready for this, whatever it is. "Yes?" I whisper. Her voice is calm. "I need to tell you something. It's going to sound very, very strange. What I need is for you to listen to the whole story. You will probably want to leave. You might want to laugh, but I need you to take this seriously. I know it will sound unbelievable, but it's the truth. Do you understand?" What have I gotten myself into? What's going on here? It doesn't even occur to me to leave. No, this is now my life. Whatever she's about to say is going to be my life. It's all there in her eyes. We hold there for one very careful moment. Then she breaks it with her words. "Every morning, I wake up in a different body. It's been happening since I was born. This morning, I woke up as Megan Powell, who you see right in front of you. 3 days ago, last Saturday, it was Nathan Daldry. 2 days before that, it was Amy Tran, who visited your school and spent the day with you. And last Monday, it was Justin, your boyfriend. You thought you went to the ocean with him, but it was really me. That was the first time we ever met, and I haven't been able to forget you since." No. That's all my mind can come up with. No, this is not happening. This is not what I want. I came here to find something real, and now I'm being served bullshit. It's the punch of the punchline. I am the butt of the joke. You're kidding me, right? I'm so angry, so mad. You have to be kidding. This girl is good. She doesn't laugh. She doesn't let down her guard at all. No, she keeps going, more urgent now, like I need to believe her, like I need to fall for it even worse. When we were on the beach, you told me about the mother-daughter fashion show that you and your mother were in, and how it was probably the last time you ever saw her in makeup. When Amy asked you to tell her about something you'd never told anyone else, you told her about trying to pierce your own ear when you were 10, and she told you about reading Judy Blume's Forever. Nathan came over to you as you were sorting through CDs, and he sang a song that you and Justin sang during the car ride to the ocean. He told you he was Steve's cousin, but he was really there to see you. He talked to you about being in a relationship for over a year, and you told him that deep down, Justin cares a lot about you, and he said that deep down isn't good enough. What I'm saying is that all of these people were me for a day. And now I'm Megan Powell, and I want to tell you the truth before I switch again, because I think you're remarkable, because I don't want to keep meeting you as different people. I want to meet you as myself. I feel stalked. I feel tricked. I feel like everything good that's happened in the past 8 days has just been pissed on. The beach, the dancing, even taking that girl around the school. It's all just someone else's joke. And there's only one person who could have done this. Only one person who could have known. Did Justin put you up to this? I can't believe this. I truly can't believe this. Do you really think this is funny? No, it's not funny, she says. And the way she says it, there isn't anything funny in there at all. It's true. I don't expect you to understand right away. I know how crazy it sounds, but it's true. I swear it's true. She really wants me to believe it. I guess that would make it even funnier. What's strange is that she doesn't seem like a bitch. She doesn't seem like someone who'd get off on torturing me. But isn't that what she's doing? I don't understand why you're doing this, I tell her, my voice shaking. I don't even know you. She can see she's lost me, and it's making her more desperate. Listen to me, she begs, her voice shedding some calm. Please. You know it wasn't Justin with you that day. In your heart, you know. He didn't act like Justin. He didn't do things Justin does. That's because it was me. I didn't mean to do it. I didn't mean to fall in love with you. But it happened. And I can't erase it. I can't ignore it. I have lived my whole life like this. And you're the thing that has made me wish it could stop. I want to stop listening. I want to stop myself from driving over here, from wanting to know what was going on. I should have left it unknown, because now it's still unknown, but it's a much worse unknown. And the awful part is, she's right. Justin didn't act like Justin. I know that. But that doesn't mean it wasn't Justin. It just means it was a better day than usual. I have to believe that. Because this story can't be true. I mean, why not just say he was taken over by aliens, bitten by a vampire, and... Wait, then there's the most unbelievable part of all. According to this story, I am the girl. I am worth all that. But... Why me? I ask, as if I've finally found the flaw, finally proven her wrong. That makes no sense. But she doesn't give in. She launches back with, because you're amazing. Because you're kind to a random girl who just shows up at your school. Because you also want to be on the other side of the window, living life instead of just thinking about it. Because you're beautiful. Because when I was dancing with you in Steve's basement on Saturday night, it felt like fireworks. And when I was lying on the beach next to you, it felt like perfect calm. I know you think that Justin loves you deep down, but I love you through and through. Enough! Oh, God. Now I'm the girl yelling in the cafe. Now I'm losing it. It's just enough, okay? I think I understand what you're saying to me, even though it makes no sense whatsoever. You know it wasn't him that day, don't you? I want her to stop. I don't want to know any of this. I don't want to be thinking about this. I don't want to be thinking about all the ways Justin has avoided talking about that day, about how my love for him made so much sense then, but hasn't since. About how I haven't found any of him from that day in the hymn afterward. I don't want to think about how I felt when I was dancing with Nathan, about how it felt when he sang that song, about the real reason I came here today, about what I really wanted. I don't know anything, I insist. Again, I'm too loud. People are watching. Whatever story they're playing out in their minds, it's not going to be this one. I lower my voice. I don't want them to hear more. I don't want to do this. I don't know, I say. I really don't know. Why? Why is this happening to me? Why can't I stand up and leave? Why am I thinking for even a second that it might not be a lie? Her. This girl. I look at her. Her heart is breaking. She is looking at me, and her heart is breaking. I don't understand. I don't understand why. Her hand is moving onto mine. She is holding my hand. She is trying to get me through this. She is trying to take me through. I know it's a lot. Her voice is hurt. Her voice is comfort. Believe me, I know. I can barely get the words out. It's not possible. It is, she says. I'm the proof. Proof. Proof is a fact. None of this is a fact. This is a feeling. All of this is a feeling. No, it's thousands of feelings. So many of them, yes, so many of them, no. She wants me to believe. What? That she was Justin, that she was Nathan, that girl in school, other people. How can I believe that? Who would ever believe that? It cannot be a fact. But it's still a feeling. The yes, it's there. How can I let myself feel that? How? Look, she says. What if we met here again tomorrow at the same time? I won't be in the same body, but I'll be the same person. Would that make it easier to understand? Like it's that simple. Like that couldn't be a trick. But couldn't you just tell someone else to come here? I point out. If I can be suckered by one person, why not another? Yes, but why would I? This isn't a prank. This isn't a joke. It's my life. The way she says it, it's my life. Not a feeling. Fact. You're insane, I tell her. If she actually believes what she's saying, how could she not be? But she doesn't seem at all insane when she tells me, you're just saying that. You know I'm not. You can sense that much. I look at her again. I search for the lie in her eyes, the flaw. And when I don't see it, I decide, fine, it's time for me to ask some questions. I start by asking her what her name is. Today, I'm Megan Powell. No, I say, I mean your real name. Because if she's really jumping from body to body, there has to be a name for the person inside. I've thrown her. She wasn't expecting this question. I wait for her to back away from what she said. I wait for her to laugh and say I've got her. But she doesn't laugh. She hesitates, but she doesn't laugh. "A," she finally says. At first, I don't get it. Then I realize she's telling me that this is her name. "Just A?" I ask. "Just A. I came up with it when I was a little kid. It was a way of keeping myself whole, even as I went from body to body, life to life. I needed something pure, so I went with the letter A." I don't want to believe this. "What do you think about my name?" I challenge. "I told you the other night, I think it's beautiful, even if you once found it hard to spell." "True. That is true. But I can't. I can't. I'm sure there are other questions, but I'm out of them. I'm sure there could be plenty more time, but I'm out of time. I can't do this. I can't allow this to be real. I can't start believing her, because that will make me an even bigger fool." I stand up. She stands up, too. There are still people looking at us, imagining we're having a fight, or imagining we're a couple, or imagining this is a first date that's been a total bust. Fact: it is none of these things. Feeling: it is all of these things. "Rhiannon," she says. And it's in there. It's in the way she says my name. Every now and then, Justin says my name like that. Like it's the most precious thing in the world. Forget about everyone else laughing. Now I want to laugh. This can't be happening. It can't. She's going to tell me more. She's going to push it further. She's going to say my name like that again, and I am going to hear music in it I shouldn't hear. I hold up my hand. "No more," I insist. "Not now." And then it's there. The answer I don't want. The benefit against the doubt. "Tomorrow. I'll give you tomorrow. Because that's one way to know, isn't it? If what you say is happening is really happening, I mean, I need more than a day." I'm waiting for her to put up a fight. I'm waiting for her to argue it some more. Or maybe this is the part where the camera crew comes out and I discover my humiliation has all been filmed for some cruel TV show. But no. None of that happens. All that happens is that she thanks me. Genuine thanks. Thankful thanks. "Don't thank me until I show up," I warn her. "This is all really confusing." "I know," she says. "It's my life." I have to go. But then I turn back one last time to look at her, and I see how she's on the border between hope and devastation. It's that visible to me. And even though the alarms are loud and clear in my head, I feel I can't leave her like this. I want to push her a little closer to hope and a little farther from devastation. "The thing is," I say, "I didn't really feel it was him that day. Not completely. And ever since then, it's like he wasn't there. He has no memory of it. There are a million possible explanations for that. But there it is." "There it is," she echoes. There's no bragging in her voice, no trickery. It can't be real. But it's real to her. Fact. Feeling. I shake my head. "Tomorrow," she says. Now it's my turn to echo. "Tomorrow," I tell her, committing myself to something I feel like I became committed to a long time ago. "Tomorrow," a word I've used for as long as I knew what it meant. But now, now it feels like it means something different. Now it feels like it means something slightly new. I don't text Justin. I don't call him. No, I go straight to his house and pound on the door. His parents are still at work. I know he's the only one home. It takes him a couple of minutes, but he opens the door. He's surprised to see me.
"We weren't supposed to be doing something, were we?"
he asks. "No," I tell him. "I just need to talk to you for a second."
Okay. Do you want to come in?"
"Sure." He takes me into the den where his warfare game is paused. I have to move the controller to clear a seat next to him.
"What's up?"
he asks. "It's about last week. I need to talk to you about it." He looks confused, or maybe just impatient.
"What about last week?"
"When we went to the beach. Do you remember that?"
"Of course I remember that."
"What songs played as we drove there?" He looks at me like I've just asked him about rocket science.
"How the fuck am I supposed to remember what songs were playing?"
"Was it cold or warm?"
"You were there, don't you know?"
"You told me a story about climbing a tree when you were 11. Do you remember that?" He snorts.
"I could barely climb a ladder when I was 11. I don't think I was climbing any trees." "Why are you asking me this?"
"But you remember being there, right?"
"Sure. There was sand. There was water. It was a beach."
I don't understand. He has some memory, but not all of it. I decide to try a lie. "You were so nice to me when I was stung by that jellyfish. God, that hurt. But I liked the way you carried me back to the car."
"I wasn't going to leave you there," he says. "You're easy to carry."
He wasn't there. He was there, but he wasn't there. I am so confused. His hand is brushing over my knee, up my leg.
"I can carry you somewhere now if you want."
He's coming in for a kiss. His lips are against mine. His body is starting to press. This is not what I want, and he has no idea. And I don't know how to explain, so I kiss him back. Acceleration. His hand going under my shirt, his tongue in my mouth. The cigarette taste of him. The sweat and grit on his hand from the controller. I know it's really bad to pull away. That will hurt him if I pull away. But I pull away. Not far, but enough. He pulls back in reaction.
"What? I figure if you came all this way..."
"I can't," I tell him. "I've got too much going on in my head. I'm not in the mood." He moves his thumb slowly against my breast.
"I believe I know ways to put you in the mood."
Usually my body reaches out for this. "Stop," I say. He's not a jerk. When I say stop, he stops. But he doesn't look happy about it.
"Are you getting tired of me?"
he asks. He wants it to sound like he's joking, and I could point out that if he'd stayed sober on Saturday night, we could have done something then. But is that really true? After dancing with Nathan, would I really have had sex with Justin? I know what I'm supposed to say, and I say it. "No, I could never get tired of you." I kiss him again, but it's clearly a goodbye kiss. I'm tired, yes, but not of you. I stand up, and he doesn't get up to walk me out. Instead, he grabs the controller, unpausing his game. I've hurt him. I didn't mean to, but I have.
"I'll see you tomorrow," he says.
Tomorrow. The version he's offering isn't the same as the one the girl, A, offered. I guess I'm not going to know which tomorrow I'm stepping into until I actually get there. Chapter 8. I fall asleep right after dinner and wake up right before midnight. And in that waking moment, I think, I want to go back there. I want to go back to that day when everything was perfect and Justin was everything I want him to be. even if it wasn't Justin. I can't believe I'm allowing myself to think this. I can't believe I'm opening my email. I can't believe I am typing, A, I want to believe you, but I don't know how. Rhiannon. I can't believe I am hitting send, but I do. And I guess this means there is a part of me that believes. I check my email again at lunch. Rhiannon, you don't need to know how. You just make up your mind, and it happens. I am in Laurel right now, over an hour away. I am in the body of a football player named James. I know how strange that sounds, but like everything I've told you, it's the truth. Love, A. A football player named James. Either this is the most elaborate prank ever pulled on a stupid girl, or it's real. These are the only two options, trick or truth. I am trying hard to think of another explanation, but there's nothing in the middle. The only way to know is to play along. A. Do you have a car? If not, I can come to you. There's a Starbucks in Laurel. I'm told that nothing bad ever happens in a Starbucks. Let me know if you want to meet there. Rhiannon. A few minutes later, a reply. Rhiannon, I would appreciate it if you could come here. Thank you. A. I have to excuse myself to go to the girls' room because I can see Rebecca's wondering who I'm emailing in the middle of lunch. The answer is so ridiculous that I can't even think of a good lie to cover for it. Safe in a stall, I type back, A. I'll be there at 5. Can't wait to see what you look like today. Still not believing this. Rhiannon. And then I am standing there, the girl in the stall with the phone out, staring at the screen that doesn't even hold the message she typed, since it's already flown away, into the hands of someone she doesn't really know. There is nothing that can make you feel quite so dumb as wanting something good to be true. That's the horrifying part, that I want this to be true. I want him, her, him, to exist. I promise myself I won't think about it until 5 o'clock, and then I break that promise 1,000 times. Even Justin can tell I'm distracted. The moment when I least need him to pay attention, he finds me after school and is concerned.
I missed you today,
he says. His hands move to my back, and he starts to work the tension from the muscles there. It feels good. And he's doing it in the middle of the hall, right by our lockers, which isn't something he usually does. I missed you too, I say, even though it doesn't feel entirely true.
Let's go find a Girl Scout and get some cookies, he says.
I laugh, then realize he means it. And where will you find a Girl Scout? I ask.
3 doors down from me. I swear, she has a vault full of thin mints. Sometimes there are lines on her porch. She's like a dealer.
I have time for this. It's not even 3 yet. If I get on the road by 4, I should be fine to get to the Starbucks in Laurel by 5. Does she have Samoas, too?
Are those the coconut ones or the peanut butter ones?
Coconut.
I'm sure she has them all. Seriously, she's a cartel.
I can tell he's excited. Usually I can find complaints waiting in the corners of his words or gestures. But right now, they're nowhere in sight. He's happy. And part of the reason he's happy is because he's happy to see me. Let's go, I say. We park our cars in his driveway and then walk 3 doors down. He doesn't hold my hand or anything, but it still feels like we're together. The girl who answers the door can't be older than 11, and she's so small that I'm amazed her mom lets her answer the door at all.
Have you placed a pre-order?
She asks, pulling out an iPad. This cracks Justin up.
No, This is more of a drive-by.
Then I can't promise availability,
the girl states.
That's why we encourage pre-orders.
She reaches for a table next to the door and hands us a cookie listing as well as a business card with a website address on it.
But since you're here, I am happy to see what I can do. Just note that the pre-refrigerated Thin Mints are pre-order only.
Justin doesn't even look at the paper.
We'd like a box of samosas, he says. The coconut ones.
I believe you mean Samoas, the girl corrects. I am going to have to close and lock the door while I check inventory. Are you sure you only want one box? A lot of people say they only want one, and then they're back the next day for more.
Mia, you know I live down the street. Just get us the box.
Mia is clearly considering a harder sell, then thinks better of it.
One moment,
she says, then shuts the door in our faces.
Her parents once got so desperate that they asked me to babysit,
Justin tells me,
and I was so desperate for cash that I said yes. She offered me cookies, then left a note for her mother to take the cost of the cookies out of my pay. I set the note on fire and dropped it in the sink. I don't think she appreciated that.
I can't imagine asking Justin to babysit. And I can also imagine him being the most fun babysitter ever if you didn't try to bill him. Mia returns with our box of Samoas. Justin takes the box from her hand and starts to walk away without paying, which makes Mia turn purple in outrage. Then Justin says,
"Just kidding,"
turns back, and gives her the cash in singles.
"Next time, pre-order,"
she tells both of us, before slamming the door again.
"Not the sweetest girl,"
Justin comments as we head back to his house.
"But she gives good cookie."
Instead of going inside, Justin leads me to the backyard. His mom has a small garden with a bench. He takes me there.
"Samoa for your thoughts?"
he says, pulling open the box and the plastic.
"My only thought is I want a Samoa," I tell him.
"Here,"
he says, putting one between his teeth. I lean in and snatch it up.
"Yum,"
I say, mouth full. He pops one into his own mouth.
"Yeah, yum,"
he agrees, some coconut falling into the air between us. After he swallows, he says,
"I imagine we taste the same right now."
I smile. I imagine we're both pretty coconutty and chocolatey and caramelly.
There's only one way to know for sure.
He goes in for the kiss, and I let him take it. I tell myself this is what I want, just like the ocean, just like a couple. He pulls away.
"Yum."
"Give me another."
He presses in for another kiss. I push him away and say, "I meant another cookie." He laughs. I appreciate the laugh. Instead of insisting on the kiss, he passes me the box of cookies. I take two. They're really good, much better than I remembered them being, sweet and rough.
"Don't get too hooked,"
Justin warns.
"That's how Mia gets you. Before you know it, you're pre-ordering by the dozens. And then, even worse, you're insisting that they be refrigerated."
"You speak like someone who knows. I'll bet your fridge is full of Thin Mints."
"Oh, no. It's worse than that. I only eat the fat mints now."
"Why are you in such a good mood?" I want to ask him. And then I want to ask myself, why do you have to question this?
"Want to see my stash?"
he asks. "I've already seen your stash."
"And what do you think?"
"It's huge." We're being silly, but that's nice. Even though we've been together for a while, it's still nice to flirt and to feel the lightness of flirting. I don't want to tell him I can't stay long. I know that will make it less exciting than it was a minute ago. So I don't say anything. but I also don't make a move to go inside. I kiss him here, on the bench. I kiss him here, and feel awful because one of the reasons I am kissing him here is because I know it'll be easier to leave if we're already outside. He doesn't sense it, though. He is kissing me back. He is happy. He is sure to move the precious box of cookies out of our way as we crash into each other. I begin to convince myself that this is what I want. This is where I am meant to be. I am only going to see A in order to get the explanation. But that is not my life. This is my life. Justin is my life. I get there late. I've had an hour to straighten myself out, calm myself down, make myself appear to be a girl who has not just spent an hour making out with her boyfriend. I've also been thinking of questions to ask, ways to know whether what A is saying is true. I mean, it can't be true, but I'm looking for ways to prove that. When I get to the Starbucks, I'm expecting the girl from yesterday to be there, or Nathan, someone to tell me, "Ha ha, it was a joke." But neither of them is there. Instead, there's this guy, a big football player of a guy. Not my type. Almost scary in his size. But he looks gentle when he waves to me. Again, my perspective changes when I look into his eyes. All the assumptions fall away. I take a deep breath. I know I need to settle this. I try to remember my plan. "Okay," I say, as soon as I get to his table and sit down. "Before we say another word, I want to see your phone. I want to see every single call you've made in the past week and every single call you received. If this isn't some big joke, then you have nothing to hide." I can't imagine that after being with me so sweetly, Justin would have set this up. But I want to make sure his number isn't on the phone. I want to see if there are any texts or calls on there from yesterday. I search around. I look at the contacts. I don't find any phone calls from yesterday. The two texts are from friends of his. There's nothing about me anywhere. So there's that. I hand back the phone and tell him it's time for me to quiz him. I start by asking what I was wearing that day on the beach. Worry flashes in his eyes.
"I don't know,"
he says after half a minute.
"Do you remember what Justin was wearing?"
I try to remember. But what I remember instead is the feeling, the wonder of it all, not the clothes. "Good point," I say. "Did we make out?" He shakes his head.
"We used the make-out blanket, but we didn't make out. We kissed, and that was enough."
I note his use of the phrase make-out blanket and the fact that he doesn't make too much of a deal of it. "And what did I say to you before I left the car?" I ask.
"That's the nice note."
"Correct. Quick, what's Steve's girlfriend's name?"
"Stephanie."
"And what time did the party end?"
11:15.
"And when you were in the body of that girl who I took to all of my classes, what did the note you passed me say?"
"Something like, 'The classes here are just as boring as in the school I'm going to now.'"
"And what were the buttons on your backpack that day?"
"Anime kittens."
I try to think of a way he could know all this from all those different people. Short of him being able to read my mind, I can't explain it. "Well," I say, "you're either an excellent liar or you switch bodies every day. I have no idea which one is true."
"It's the second one,"
he assures me. Then he looks concerned again.
"Let's go outside,"
he whispers.
"I feel we may be getting an unintended audience."
I can't see the person he's talking about, but I can see other people who could easily be listening to us. Still, his proposal is a little too step into my van for my taste. maybe if you were a petite cheerleader again, I tell him. But I'm not sure if you fully realize this. You're a big, threatening dude today. My mother's voice is very loud and clear in my head. No dark corners. He points out the window, to a bench along the road.
Totally public, only without people listening in.
Fine, I say. I'm trying to think of new questions as we walk outside. I haven't even gotten any coffee, but it doesn't seem like the right time to stop for a latte. He seems nervous. And if I'm honest, I know it's not a serial killer nervousness. It feels like the only thing that could be killed here are his hopes. I have never seen a boy hope so visibly. I wonder if he knows he's doing it. Distance. I let him sit down first so I can keep a little distance, so I can look into those eyes without falling into them, so I can keep some judgment. I want to know more, so I need to ask more. If he's going to convince me, he's going to have to tell me much more. So, I resume, you say you've been like this since the day you were born? He hesitates for a brief moment. I get a sense that he doesn't have conversations like this very often. Well, I don't either.
Yes,
he says quietly.
I can't remember it being any different.
So, how did that work? Weren't you confused? Again, he thinks about it for a second, then answers,
I guess I got used to it. I'm sure that, at first, I figured it was just how everybody's lives worked. I mean, when you're a baby, you don't really care much about who's taking care of you, as long as someone's taking care of you. And as a little kid, I thought it was some kind of a game, and my mind learned how to access, you know, look at the body's memories, naturally. So I always knew what my name was and where I was. It wasn't until I was 6 or 7 that I started to realize I was different, and it wasn't until I was 9 or 10 that I really wanted it to stop.
You did? I ask. The idea of leaving your body sounds almost fun to me. A relief.
Of course, he says. Imagine being homesick but without having a home. That's what it was like. I wanted friends, a mom, a dad, a dog, but I couldn't hold on to any of them more than a single day. It was brutal. There are nights I remember screaming and crying, begging my parents not to make me go to bed. They could never figure out what I was afraid of. They thought it was a monster under the bed or a ploy to get a few more bedtime stories. I could never really explain, not in a way that made sense to them. I'd tell them I didn't want to say goodbye, and they'd assure me it wasn't goodbye, it was just goodnight. I'd tell them it was the same thing, but they thought I was being silly.
Now it doesn't sound fun at all. It sounds lonely. He goes on.
Eventually, I came to peace with it. I had to. I realized that this was my life, and there was nothing I could do about it. I couldn't fight the tide, so I decided to float along.
I can't get my mind around it. No friends, no people in your life from day to day. So lonely. How many times have you told this story? I ask him.
None, I swear. You're the first.
There's only you. Why am I thinking of Justin right now? Why am I thinking of the time, drunk on wine in the passenger seat of my car, he said those words to me? I wasn't even mad. I didn't mind driving. Instead of, thank you, that's what he said. And he was so grateful when he said it. So damn grateful. But I can't think about that. Instead, I go back to A's story. You have to have parents, don't you? I say. I mean, we all have parents. He shrugs.
I have no idea. I would think so, but it's not like there's anyone I can ask. I've never met anyone else like me. Not that I would necessarily know.
I don't always get along with my parents, but I am still glad they're around. I think he's going to tell me more about not having parents, about not having roots. But he surprises me.
I've glimpsed things,
he says. I expect him to say more, to tell me what this means, what he's seen. But I have to remember, he's new at this. He's still very unsure. Go on, I prompt. Permission. He smiles, happy for it. I want to hug him, if only for that smile.
It's just, I know it sounds like an awful way to live, but I've seen so many things. It's so hard when you're in one body to get a sense of what life is really like. You're so grounded in who you are. But when who you are changes every day, you get to touch the universal more. Even the most mundane details. You see how cherries taste different to different people. Blue looks different. You see all the strange rituals boys have to show affection without admitting it. You learn that if a parent reads to you at the end of the day, it's a good sign that it's a good parent, because you've seen so many other parents who don't make the time. You learn how much a day is truly worth, because they're all so different. If you ask most people what the difference was between Monday and Tuesday, they might tell you what they had for dinner each night. Not me. By seeing the world from so many angles, I get more of a sense of its dimensionality.
But you never get to see things over time, do you? I ask. I don't mean to cancel out what you just said. I think I understand that. But you've never had a friend that you've known day in and day out for 10 years. You've never watched a pet grow older. You've never seen how messed up a parent's love can be over time. And you've never been in a relationship for more than a day, not to mention for more than a year.
But I've seen things,
he says.
I've observed. I know how it works.
From the outside? I'm really trying to get my mind around this, but it's hard. Blue looks different. I don't think you can know from the outside.
I think you underestimate how predictable some things can be in a relationship.
I should have known we'd get here. I should have known this would come up. He met me as Justin, after all. He knows the deal, or thinks he does. I need to make it clear. I love him, I say. I know you don't understand, but I do.
You shouldn't. I've seen him from the inside. I know.
For a day, I point out. You saw him for a day.
And for a day, you saw who he could be. You fell more in love with him when he was me.
This is very hard to hear. I don't know if it's true or not. If you'd asked me yesterday, maybe yes. If you ask me now, after Girl Scout cookies, maybe no. He goes for my hand. But I can't do it. It's committing too much. No, I say. Don't. He doesn't. I have a boyfriend, I go on. I know you don't like him, and I'm sure there are moments when I don't like him either, but that's the reality. Now, I'll admit, you have me actually thinking that you are, in fact, the same person who I've now met in 5 different bodies. All this means is that I'm probably as insane as you are. I know you say you love me, but you don't really know me. You've known me a week, and I need a little more than that.
But didn't you feel it that day, on the beach? Didn't everything seem right?
Yes. Everything within me jumps to that one word. Yes. It did seem right. But that was feeling. All feeling. I still cannot speak to any fact. but I cannot withhold my answer either. So I tell him, yes, but I don't know who I was feeling that for. Even if I believe it was you, you have to understand that my history with Justin plays into it. I wouldn't have felt that way with a stranger. It wouldn't have been so perfect.
How do you know?
That's my point. I don't. I shouldn't have left Justin. I shouldn't have made an excuse to go. This is too dangerous, because none of it can be fact. I look down at my phone. I haven't been here long, but it's getting close to too long. I have to make it back for dinner, I tell him. Technically, correct. If I want to get back in time, I should be leaving now. I'm thinking he'll put up a fight. Justin would put up a fight. He'd make it clear he wanted me to stay. But A lets me go.
Thanks for driving all this way,
he says. Should I tell him he's welcome? What does that even mean? Welcome to what?
Will I see you again?
He asks. I don't have the heart to say no, because there's a part of my heart that wants to stay, and will stay with him until I come to get it back. I nod.
I'm going to prove it to you,
he tells me.
I'm going to show you what it really means.
What?
Love.
No. I am scared of that. I am scared of all of this. But I don't tell him that. I tell him goodbye instead. The kind of goodbye that's never, ever final. Chapter 9. I remember the way everyone reacted when I got together with Justin, when we became a thing. They didn't think I was paying attention, but I was. Rebecca told me I could do better. She told me Justin could never really care about anyone because he didn't really care about himself. She said I deserved to be with someone who had his shit together. I told her I didn't know anyone who had their shit together, including her. She told me she was going to pretend I hadn't said that. She told me I was smarter than I thought I was, but I always liked to prove myself stupid by making bad decisions. I told her I loved him anyway, and my use of the word love surprised us both. I held up. She backed down. Preston said he was happy for me, and when I asked him why, he told me it was because I had found something meaningful. He didn't think Justin was unworthy of my love, because he believed everyone was worthy of love. He needs you, and that's not a bad thing, he told me. We all need somewhere to put our love. I remember liking this thought, that I had this certain amount of love that I needed to store someplace, and I decided to keep some of it in Justin. Steve said Justin was decent. Stephanie said she wasn't sure. I don't think any of them, even Preston, expected it to last longer than a month. Any love I stored in Justin would ultimately be given away, lost in a fire, left by the side of the road. And if this was their reaction to Justin, I couldn't imagine what they would say if I told them about A. The thought will not leave my head. If this is possible, what else is possible? I get to school and walk to my locker, and it's only when I'm at my locker that I realize I haven't stopped to look for Justin. And then, even stranger, I don't go looking for him. I wait to see how long it'll take him to come looking for me. Not between first and second periods. Not before lunch. Even at lunch, I sit between Preston and Rebecca, and instead of taking the spot across from me, he sits farther down. It isn't until the end of lunch that he says something to me. And what he says is,
I'm so tired.
I know I'm not the one who's going to wake him up. I find myself wondering who A is today, where A is. And at the same time, I wonder if all the A's I've met are in a room together, laughing at me, not believing how a girl could be so stupid, looking at the video of my face over and over again, daring each other to push it further. That's not it, I tell myself. But what else is possible? I check my email after lunch and find word from him. Her? Rhiannon, you'd actually recognize me today. I woke up as James's twin. I thought this might help me figure things out, but so far, no luck. I want to see you again. A. I don't know what to say to this. Trick or truth? Yes, I want to see A again. Yes, I'm afraid. No, it doesn't make sense. But what does? I'm asking myself this all afternoon. Does it make sense that Preston is seen as the gay one when none of the rest of us are seen as the straight one? Does it make sense that Stephanie's father freaked out when she, briefly, dated Aaron because Aaron is black? Does it make sense that Justin and I can get as close as two people can be and still can't figure out anything to say to each other when we're separate and walking the halls of school? Does it make sense that I am sitting here learning about the gestation cycle of a frog when there is no way that this knowledge is going to matter to me as soon as the next test is over? Does it make sense that Mr. Myers is spending his life teaching the gestation cycle of a frog to kids who mostly don't care? Does it make sense that some people get everything they want because they're pretty? Would it make all of us nicer, or at least a little more humble, if we had to switch every day?
What are you thinking about?
Justin's caught me at my locker, in a daze. It's nothing, I tell him, just daydreaming. He lets it go.
Look,
he says,
what are you doing now?
It's the end of the day. I have no idea what I'm doing. I could have driven back to the Starbucks and met the twin of the guy from yesterday.
Although, how would I have known it was really a twin?
What if it was the same guy again? It's not like I could really tell. Suddenly, I'm suspicious. Really suspicious. I wonder if tomorrow he'll say he's a triplet. Or that he's stayed in the same body after all. Alarm. I'm starting to get pissed off. Irrationally pissed off. Or maybe rationally pissed off.
Are you even listening to me?
I am not listening to him. I need to listen to him. Because he is my boyfriend, and he has no idea what's going on inside my head. No plans, I say.